Hello and welcome back to Mess Explores with Xavier and Alan, where as always we'll be looking at all manner of films from around the world. This week we're seeking greatness through disciplined ambition in The Disciple from 2020, so let's pluck some strings. Hello, Alan.
Hello, Saban. What an introduction there. Of course, hello to our favourite fans. Welcome back to Mez Explores. Before we begin to devote our lives to reaching a point of near unobtainable perfection, remember, as always, our podcasts are best enjoyed if you've seen the film prior, as we contain spoilers. As Save said, we are looking at The Disciple, which is a 2020 Indian film written and directed by Chaitanya Tamahe. The Disciple stars Aditya Madhok, Arun Dravid, and Sumitra Bhave, just to name a few. So let's get straight into the film, Save. What did you think?
Well, there's a line in here that says, if you choose this path, learn to be lonely and hungry. This is a calling and it's a way of life. And I think, yeah, this was a really nice little film about dedicating one's life to a passion and a purpose, regardless of what those around us may think, and regardless of the personal cost and sacrifice required to attain greatness. But it also looked at how greatness is not always something which we can drive on our own. You know, sometimes our ambition isn't enough for success, and our beliefs and preconceived ideas about things, in this case, the path one must walk, may be the very things which actually get in our way, just as it did for Sharon. As sometimes greatness also depends on the actions of others to propel us along, regardless of our steadfast defiance and determination. So I think what we got here was a very nice little film that looked at the motivations of an individual to achieve a level of greatness that so few of us actually try to attain. What did you think?
This was a refreshingly different and well-made film from India. I found it to be a creative coming-of-age story about a Mumbai boy who has an affinity towards classical music, and this is an account exploring the space amongst the strains and commitments of adult life and the sluggish incubation period of a classical music career. Now, our main protagonist seeks the direction of an esteemed master of the craft, and I found that it was an exploration of Tamahe's interpretation of what a musician's vocation and profession would be. Sharad's musical training with his teacher is not unusual and falls into the usual parameters of what many would consider educational, but his general relationship with his guru is intertwined with his educational one. We witness him assist him bathing his guru, applying ointment and creams, and there's even a scene of him taking to the doctor and paying the expense. Now, this obviously transcends the normal boundaries of mentor and student, and the relationship is more akin to that of a father. Now, the caveat here is that Guruji also mentored Sharad's father, who's actually now passed away. His father failed to become a professional musician that he aspired to be, and he was almost resentful by that process. And maybe his loss of his father is being fulfilled through his guru. Through musical devotion, he's able to achieve a closeness that guides his father's presence. Now, this dynamic is sort of established early on in the film, and it's imperative for the narrative to progress. The approval from a master is every student's desiring aim.
This film most definitely sought to show us the path of a musician in ways which were about so much more than just the music. I mean, it went for a deep dive about what motivates us and what inhibits us and what parts of life simply must be lived, whether they serve a purpose in the pursuit of our dreams or not. And in this case, for Sharad, as you indicated, you know, it's responsibilities he takes on with his Guruji as he gets older, you know, as a father-like figure with a doting son.
I believe to understand this film, Save, and appreciate it, I think it's important to know what form of music the protagonist is actually learning or pursuing. Now, when researching the background of Carnatic music derivatives, I came across an article by Jay Weisberg from Variety magazine, and Weisberg states that the khayal, which is actually the form that Sharad practices, is a very traditional Hindustani musical form which the devotees spend decades in the hopes of perfecting the art. The performative, improvised nature of the singing, in which intonation and elisions vary from one recital to the other, and it's actually dependent on the psychological state of the singer as well as the receptivity of the listeners, who are expected to recognize the nuances of each performance. Now, this level of complexity and nuance is actually amazingly insane. Do you think that, like, we could actually be committed to something like this, eh?
I don't know about you, but for me, in a word, no. I mean, there may be many a thing I'm disciplined or interested in, but to commit a lifetime to achieving such a mastery skill, I know I don't have that wired into me. But I do like to think that This was in a way taking a swipe at modern musicians. I mean, they're pumped out by greedy corporations and crap television shows to make a fast buck. Computers do the bulk of the legwork, and true musicians often left in the shadows because they aren't willing to haul themselves out in such a demeaning fashion. However, it's ultimately to their detriment, and society on the whole begins to fail to appreciate true music. And I think we saw this reflected for the audience when Sherrod was trawling the YouTube comments on his videos and he found the people that didn't appreciate what he was actually trying to do or why the music was a particular way. Because I guess to a certain extent we've become indoctrinated as to what music is these days. And anyone that knows me knows that my Mr. Grumbles alter ego has more than once grumbled about the fact that musicians these days are talentless hacks. But that's a different story.
Look, I think it's a very important point that you brought up about him crawling to the comments. And if you take what I've said previously about the Kayel into the context of my answer, it's very hard for a musician who's dedicated their lives to perfecting the craft and the nuance of their voice and intonations to like not even worry about what the audience feels, because as we stated before, the audience's receptiveness is, I guess, a criteria for how the performance went. So I can definitely empathize with Sherrod, but I can also understand why it's important to keep those negative comments at bay. And now there are times when I feel empathetic to Sherrod, all that passion fails to actually translate to progress. Or maybe I'm just feeling the frustration that a character's feeling. The inability to assess my own failures as an audience prevents me from understanding the devotion required to reach such levels of perfection. Now, to allow the audience to experience true frustration synonymous with the character is, I think, a testament to the director itself. Now, this isn't a film where we have those few scenes where a character is failing and then a concurrent frame where they're beating the odds. This film is an exploration of true personal grit, the kind Angela Duckworth actually describes in her book. Now, we consistently see that Sherrod isn't making great progress. Tamhane frames this early on with Guruji's blessing the audience with a mesmerizing performance, and then he turns to his two students on stage who manage to meet the strict standards that he set, but Sherrod fails to perform. Maybe it's performance anxiety or maybe it's self-pressure, but he begins to clam up and then he begins to be subjected to Guruji's criticism while being on stage in front of the audience. And I think that whole dynamic is powerful.
It really is. And I think there's a lot of sort of things at play in this little dynamic, because there are pressures that are applied to us throughout our lives in whatever vocation we try to pursue. And, you know, they come in the form of comments on YouTube. They may be the people that mentor us on stage. They may be our own friends or our own family, or they'll be our own personal demons that we sort of fight with all the time throughout our own lives. And that's also something which we see Sherrod deal with throughout the film. But I think more to the point of this is it's talking about the discipline involved in becoming so good and you are a master at this sort of thing. And it's summed up by a great line in the film which says, "You want everything in a hurry." And I feel it's talking to a modern generation which expects everything to happen rapidly, you know, without time, practice, persistence, or patience. But at the same time, not everybody's destined for greatness either, no matter how much time they commit to something. And I think that's one of the things we started to see with Sherrod in this film, was that he was willing to commit a lifetime to this, but he was unlikely to ever be someone that was truly successful. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, some of us are just cut out for certain things, irrespective of how much effort we actually put into them.
Yeah, look, I think the rapid, fast-paced nature of our consumeristic society is actually presented here in the quote that you just mentioned. And I find it surprising that even after learning such an art form from childhood and investing so many years, that the Guruji actually decides to mention this to him. It seems that this quote goes beyond the rapid pace that we consume information, detracting our ability to focus. I think it's more targeted towards Sherrod and its inability to compartmentalize his mind when performing.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think, you know, now's probably a good time to actually talk a little bit more about the character of Sherrod. So do you want to go into him a little bit more?
Yeah, so look, I think the film reminds me of the movie Whiplash, but it's a much tamer version. Unlike Whiplash, the disciple's intensity is in its brutal honesty. But with that being said, let me just break down what Sherrod's character and his acting meant for me. We've already discussed how obsessive he is and how much his skill consumes his life. But what I found interesting is that we never get to see why his refrain from communicating with his mother is so important. Is it because you know, she's disapproving to his father's failures and doesn't want him to lead the same pathway for his future? Or is it because he's just simply busy and just wants to practice his craft? His job seems like it's not enough to make ends meet, and his grandma has even commented on it. And I found Aditya Modak, who plays Asharad's, his ability to convey the blank looks of failure and distraught and all the way to the jealous teacher was very profound. His subtle nuance just really elevated the character for me.
I actually wondered about his relationship with his mother as well, and I sort of got tones of Sarpada Parambarai from this, where it was the mother not wanting her son to follow in the sort of failed footsteps of his father. But as you said, you know, it didn't actually extrapolate that very far. We didn't see anything other than the fact that he did largely ignore his mother and may have made that call at some point down the track to actually speak with her. But you're right, Aditya did do a wonderful job of actually conveying this sort of vacant despair and blind hope that he would one day become this great thing that his father had never quite managed to become. And yet he also captured so well that failure where we saw others ascend and get to levels far loftier than he had in far less time. And we really saw this when there was the young girl that had managed to get successful from the reality television show. And I think that sort of highlighted that juxtaposition between his dedication and her instant fame. And yet the way he showed that with essentially no words, you could just really feel that disappointment or despair or disbelief even. And I think to convey that emotion so well is one of those hallmarks of a good actor.
Yeah. And you're spot on there, Sade. I haven't personally seen many of Aditya's previous work, but I would love to see his future work.
Mm.
But look, there's this hilarious scene in the movie that just had me laughing in hysterics. And it's when we see Sharad masturbating to porn. But obviously the screen is blacked out on the computer. So what was your take on that scene?
You're just setting me up for a fall here, I can tell.
I am. Look, I am.
Anybody that knows me or has listened to any of our podcasts know that I hate superfluous elements in film. And unfortunately, for some reason, Indian cinema seems to be hellbent on showing us content and then essentially redacting it. Don't show us scenes that don't lend anything to the film. So in this case, obviously, there was a blacked out scene and we saw Sharad from the back, obviously masturbating, as you just said. We didn't need to see the screen at the same time. This could have been a shot from a completely different angle that didn't require a blacked out screen. And this sort of stuff annoys me, and I'll harp on about it again. If we can't see what's actually going on, then the shot doesn't lend anything. And if we know what's going on without seeing it in the first place, then there's no benefit in having this shot actually included in the film. So just remove it or change the angle. Don't give us shots that then have redacted or blurred out imagery, because it just detracts.
Look, I do agree with you, Sam. I think they could have positioned the camera behind Sharad's head with his head obscuring the laptop. Look, I do respect the larger audience in India and how they may be governed by societal beliefs and cultural norms, but when you use an international platform like Netflix, they shouldn't be censoring for the world. But let's have a look at what the masturbation scene actually means. This is a man who's dedicated his life for a cause that requires years of training. I'm not even sure that he understands truly why he pursues it. Or maybe he's just decided to accept the majority of the sacrifices and are unaware of others. But in the first act, we're shown that, you know, he has a potential girlfriend or a love interest, and then we see him touch her hand only for her to sort of get up and leave abruptly. I think the pent-up frustration and loneliness of such a pursuit reaches a point where he needs to address it. And I think it's a bold statement for the director to make, but an interesting perspective on the process of the journey of Sharad as a character.
Yeah, I think it was just another element to highlight the isolation that this pursuit of greatness actually has for Sharad, that he does have to forgo everything, essentially, to achieve or attain or even attempt to attain his dreams. Mm. But with that, though, you've actually led us quite nicely into themes. And another theme I actually want to talk about is sort of this consumeristic taste, yes, you know, in terms of concerts versus traditional and skilled music. And we've touched on this a little bit earlier. But, you know, they speak of the rag as though it has a soul or a divine will in the instrument itself. Do you have sort of a viewpoint on that?
Yeah, look, at what price do you sell your souls for recognition and to seem socially acceptable? You know, is it even considered selling your soul to participate and ride the wave? Look, I think it's all comes down to perspective. For Sharad, his moral doctrine dictates selling out is suicide to the progress. And from the teachings of Maya, we learn that the music is akin to spirituality. And only when you understand yourself and you're honest you're able to break free and achieve that next level of performance. And we see Sharad, you know, watch aimlessly at how music has evolved and transformed to keep up with technology. The submissive, coy, rural girl that we mentioned before, with minimal prospects in her normal life, when she gets that opportunity and the chance to be on Prime TV, I think she ends up winning the competition or even like progressing through the ranks of the competition, only to evolve to singing cinematic songs from classical songs and dressing very provocatively. Now, Sharad and the audience both watch on how society decides what caliber and class of music is considered worthy.
I agree, and I think this is why he became so discontent in, to a certain extent, because she essentially may have had less prospects than him from the outset, being essentially what seemed to be a young rural girl, perhaps. And then she basically got launched into the stratosphere just off one audition. Whereas after years and years of performing his own music, he still hasn't got anywhere near the echelons at which she has. So I think it was a very poignant sort of self-reflection moment in the film that all of us could look at as an audience and sort of go, what do we listen to? Why do we listen to it? And or even better, why do we watch some of this reality rubbish on television? And what is it actually taking away from us? And what is it taking away from people behind the scenes who may be brilliant musicians that we've never heard of for the simple fact that they just didn't get in front of a television camera? But you also mentioned Maya just then, and I think she's the mechanism through which Sharad has to confront his own doubts and those placed upon him by society and trends. And, you know, Maya's commentary speaks to his inner turmoil and those challenges. And we particularly saw this in those moments where he'd be riding along on his motorcycle. It was that sort of slowed down footage, and it was as though you could feel his train of thought in her words. How did that make you feel?
I'm glad you made reference to this, because Sharad's fanatical devotion to his music is a sequel of his father's passion, right? His devotion to his guru and finally to Mai, who I consider to be the OG of this craft. Mai sort of instills the notion of, and I quote, surrender and sacrifice. She advocates for the renunciation of practical and commercial success, and she believes that to achieve musical enlightenment, her students must learn to be lonely and hungry, and defines her craft and musical nuance as a critical test of personal demeanor and character. Mai's perception on artistic technique is that it's merely a method to convey one's inner life, and her focus is more tuned towards introspection and the artist's ability to like yield strength to peel the layers as they brutally, unflinchingly are honest about themselves. And for Sharad, this means confronting his anxieties as an artist and acknowledging his failures and, I guess, the so-called ugly truth. This deep level of honesty proves too much for Sharad, and I think we sort of see him unplug his headphones and just sort of continue riding his bike because he doesn't want any part of this. He doesn't want to accept the truth, or he doesn't want like the mind map towards, I guess, self-redemption.
Yes, but I think there's something further here to be said, and it's almost as though she has this air of arrogance and piety about herself, suggesting one should suffer for greatness and that the reward is greatness itself, but that the cost of that greatness ultimately will also be what holds you back. And in that regard, it almost feels like a sentiment of someone whose life isn't dependent on being successful to survive. It's like saying only the rich can afford to be eccentric.
Right, interesting. Look, I think it's a very interesting perspective.
And I think particularly off the back of one of the people that Sharad actually had dealings with that said she actually was a bit of a quack, essentially, that she wasn't as great as he seemed to think.
Yeah, look, and that's right, because like when he meets this other music producer or music distributor, he learns that, you know, she was sort of, for the lack of a better word, a whore at times. And I think that enrages him because this is the foundation of where his beliefs come from and his indoctrination in this devotion. And when this man just dismisses that belief, his inner beast comes out. And I guess that reverts his devotion back to square one.
And it actually reminded me of this great line, I might butcher it slightly, from Finding Forrester. And Sean Connery says, you know, those who teach are either of great inspiration or very dangerous. And it's essentially, you know, those who can't do teach. And I feel like that's sort of what we almost felt here with Sharad, that he'd found out that this teacher, essentially, as well as Guruji, who the music producer also said had essentially been a failure, that they could be of great inspiration as they had been for Sharad. But by the same token, they were failures in themselves and potentially weren't able to get him where he needed to go, or they held him back in some regard. Now, I don't think that was necessarily done at a conscious level, particularly not for Maya, given she was just a recording. But the way that that had an effect on him personally essentially amounted to the same net result.
Yeah, look, I guess this is the age-old question where how do we define success? Is it by the parameters set by other people, or is it by the parameters that we set ourselves? And when we reach that level of self-fulfillment, do we have the energy and the discipline to fend off other negative thoughts? But with that being said, Safe, shall we move into cinematography and music?
Yeah, great. Well, look, I'll kick us off here because for me, the pace of this film was great. And, you know, that was from both a musical and a visual front. You know, those moments where you sort of move from the rag to the yoga ohms and the high frame rate shots that were then played back at, you know, 25 frames or thereabouts, depending on the region. And that just had this beautiful sort of smoothness to it where the whole pace of the film just slowed down and the audience slowed down with it. And particularly those motorcycle shots where we got this very smooth sort of voiceover narrated feel of my while watching Sherrod on the motorcycle. It just, it had such a magical feel to it because you felt like you were moving along at the pace at which Sherrod's thoughts were throughout the film. You could feel his energy, you could feel his angst, and I think the way this was shot just did that so well. And you know, we got a lot of slow sort of push-ins on frames and they gave the film this sort of nice feel of repetition to the musical tones, and it all just culminated to create just such a beautiful little film. I will, however, say that there was a couple of gripes that I had. And one of those was a bit glaring. It was disappointing given the nature this film was about sound, essentially. But the sound effect of feet when Sherrod is running after the school classroom scene was way too overpowering. It didn't actually align with the surface he was running on. That was a bit disappointing because the rest of the film, on the whole, had done the soundscape so well. And I did find a little bit of continuity issues in this film when it would step forward in time. You know, I consciously sort of had to adjust and reset trying to figure out who I was actually watching on screen for a while. And that was a little bit disappointing because given the story did jump back and forward in time a little bit in terms of seeing Sherrod or his father, when the film suddenly jumped forward to an older Sherrod that was reminiscent of his father, I'll admit I was a little bit lost briefly until I sort of caught up with what was actually going on. And I think some of the editing could have just been a little bit tidier in those regards.
The pace of the film was great. It was a little over 2 hours and you don't feel the drag. But one thing you do notice is that it jumps into different time periods. And even though we see this constant back and forth to see a young Sherrod's relationship with his father and his inception of classical music, the narrative timeline progresses forward without warning. Now, a 20-year-old Sherrod becomes a mature, responsible man, you know, sporting a moustache, and then we witness him as a family man with a child towards the end of the film. The time jumps are subtle, but they're very impactful. I didn't expect the narrative to follow the life of Sherrod, and I thought, you know, it would be a period in his life, but to honor the narrative and the message that the director was trying to convey, it made sense to me. The visuals and the musics were apt for the narrative, and having experienced South Indian classical Carnatic music before myself, there were these noticeable differences in the enunciations of the ragams. Now, there wasn't any elaborate shots used, but it still remained effective overall. The music and cinematography were character in and of itself. The way that they were conveyed was to complement the arduous journey that Sherrod was embarking on. It was patient, nuanced, and at times it reflected the distress to embody Sherrod's mind frame. And we have these spacious moments of Sherrod cruising down the street in his motorcycle to the soundtrack of My Slow and Poignant Voice, has the ability to sort of supersede his focus and paints her stoic words in the large empty world. But with that being said, Safe, let's wrap this film up.
Okay, so look, in the end, this film almost asks us about projecting our goals onto perceptions of people from the past who may not have been what they actually seem, but in a way, does it actually matter if they aren't who we thought? You know, they are who we need them to be, and this is pointed for anyone with great ambition, for at the end of the day, what is most important for each of us every day is what motivates us, for better or worse, and it's going to be different for everyone. So this film looked at so many facets of what's required for a lifetime pursuit of that greatness, and as well as where we end up when most of us don't get to the lofty heights which we had hoped, all the while seeing others succeed. This was a nicely assembled film with a very rich narrative and quite lovely execution from a Cinemax standpoint, so I give this film a 6.8 out of 10.
I feel like The Disciple offers a penetrating and, in due course, a derisive portrayal of musical philosophy and creative psychology, of the formation and introspection of an artist. It also offers an enraptured perspective of art itself. This is an account exploring the space amongst the strains and commitments of adult life and the sluggish incubation period of a classical music career, which our protagonist sort of seeks through the direction and esteemed master of the craft. The film manages to conjure up the surprises and obscurities of living, which in itself is a melodious note of art. So it's for these reasons I'm going to give the film a 7 out of 10, save, very much on par with yours.
Yeah, very nice. And once again, that's all from us, folks. And remember, you can let us know what films you'd like us to do too. Just drop us a comment on our socials. But until then, we hope you've enjoyed yet another episode from us. And remember to give us a follow and subscribe on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And recommend us to your friends and family. Until next week, though, goodbye.
Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe, guys. And we'll see you all next week. Imali sibai.